of our laughter ringing the air. Oh, wherever the time goes, I will see you there.
The time is almost up. Thanks for listening to Big Band Broadway and Beyond. God bless, and if anybody asks, tell them Joe sent you.
Must we let it end?
This is WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford Community College. Up next, our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views about Dearborn and the surrounding areas. My name is Jay Coran. I'm happy to be with you today, along with Dennis Reimars, who is our WHFR News Director. Hello, Dennis.
Hello, sir. How are you?
Well, we are great, boy. We have a lot of fun news from the papers to comment on today, and we know our listeners are tuned in case we make any mistakes.
So we do know that. That's a fact.
And we don't take calls during the show. Sorry, we're just very busy. We don't have someone to answer here, but we will take a message. You could call at any time and leave a message for us on the journal, 313-844-5-9676, option two, because option one is the live studio, and we won't answer during the show because it would cut into all of the words we are spouting here.
Plus, we get all confused if we have to stop and
but
restart.
We do corrections, and happy to do that. Also, of course, you can send an email to us here if you care to, just whfr@hfcc.edu.
Yeah, that's right.
Pretty simple, huh? So the first story, and I think it's another one of these print problems, and that is that my guess is, since we know and love J. Patrick Pepper,
very
one of the writers
so.
Of the Dearborn Press and Guide, is that I suspect he did not write the super large, bold title headline story in the Press and Guide from last Sunday, January 21st. Why? Because it's really wrong, and it makes the whole issue very controversial, so it's a stretch. Okay, it was an exaggeration to go this far, because that title is "So Long, City Hall."
It's a question, yeah.
It's a question, and they go show a picture of Dearborn's current City Hall that has been the location for the seat of our local government since it was built in 1922. And J. Patrick Pepper's story starts with a somewhat more modest concept, which is a proposal to combine administrative offices for the city and Dearborn Public Schools is getting serious consideration and could be a done deal shortly. Now, that's the overstatement that apparently Mayor O'Reilly made several quotes maybe to the papers? Was Pepper along for the tour that was given of this office building on Michigan Avenue that's under consideration? I'm not sure, but Mayor O'Reilly was very, very definite that it would be done soon, it would be a done deal. Well, of course, some of the Board of Trustees members, when they saw this in the Sunday paper, I guess on Monday they compared notes. There was only Brian Winston, the superintendent of Dearborn Public Schools, and one of the board members of Frank Guido, who went on this tour. And
Winston didn't even say in the counteract the one headline, the Dearborn Times Herald headline, as opposed to So Long City Hall, the Dearborn Times Herald headline is school district city officials exploring joint administrative building.
Right,
it's a little bit. Isn't that a little bit more accurate?
Right,
based on
it
the
was,
story,
it was a informational. Let's take a look. We're all trying to reduce cost and so
explore
on.
Options always. Yeah. So anyway, Winston didn't sound in the quotes here. He said we're looking to decide what to do as opposed to putting money into one building. Maybe it makes more sense to combine. Makes sense to me.
Right. Well, and that's because, as we find out from both these stories, the Times-Herald is officially dated 125, but probably was written about the same time. In any event, apparently the Dearborn Public Schools Administrative Center, which is at the Ten Eyck Building, which is just north of Outer Drive.
It's right on Audette. Yeah, it's actually not far from Snow Elementary School. It's right off of Outer Drive, just north. You're right.
Right. It used to be many years ago that the administrative building was somewhere on the east side, Lois Avenue, I believe.
And Ten Eyck was an actual elementary school, was it not?
Yes, originally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, many, many years back. Well, apparently Ten Eyck is in great disrepair, and it's going to cost millions of dollars to fix it. I don't know if it's just the roof or what. And they have not been putting any money aside to repair it, which is crazy. I mean, if you have any money at all, you sort of try to build up your building repair fund, you know, so you can keep the buildings you have going. So I don't know how long before that building falls in or becomes unsafe or otherwise unhealthy, the Ten Eyck building. But apparently the Dearborn Public Schools really do have a problem in terms of where to locate their administrative facility. And what's been suggested by Mayor O'Reilly, and even a suggestion by him, that City Hall would move. In other words, they'd give up that building. I don't know. What do they do with that building?
With the old City Hall?
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. What would you do with that?
I don't know. Tear it down?
Maybe build a library. Just kidding.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Which, that's another. We'll get to the story next then.
Okay.
Now that you brought that up. but it seems to me, showing the picture and having that big, bold headline, shame on Press and Guide, you're going to get controversy among people, older folks of Dearborn, that find that the City Hall iconic. I mean, how dare you leave the City Hall building? Now, we don't know, and it's not in the stories, whether or not City Hall itself has major repairs that have to be done. What's the cost to fix City Hall if it needs fixing?
That's a great question.
We don't know that. That would be an issue. If it's in as bad a shape as the Ten Eyck building is, then maybe the least expensive thing to do is to move. But, yeah, what do you do with it? That's right on that wonderful corner there. Do you build condos? You sell it to somebody for, extending the condo development that's just south of City Hall? It is an east side location. I know some people living in the west side of town. Again, Dearborn is unusual because we're separated by about, what would you guess, Dennis? 3 miles, 5 miles of Ford Motor Company land.
Oh, yeah.
And city land. I mean, the library is there too, and that's city land on the south side of Michigan. But that residents in West Dearborn, if they have to travel to City Hall, they have to go quite a distance.
Right.
It's not as convenient for them, obviously, as people in the east. But I saw that, and I thought, since I'm an old-timer, been here since 79, oh, my God, I've lived in Dearborn that long. Anyway, but I'm a newbie in terms of a lot of people here in Dearborn. In any event, to lose that iconic building, it would kind of hurt, I think. Now, where would they go? Well, apparently, there is the building on Michigan Avenue that formerly, and it's been vacant for 2 years now, was the ADP Detroit Sales Headquarters, whatever ADP was.
Oh, they tell us what it is here.
Yeah, right, American there. Data Processing or something. But anyway, it's their sales headquarters for whatever the company was, and they haven't been there. And so
Automatic Data Processing Incorporated.
Right. The property is about to revert to bank ownership. And that within the next few weeks, it should be on the market at a bargain basement price.
Yeah, it's course, in bankruptcy is, court.
Isn't everything a bargain basement price? My daughter pointed out in West Dearborn, a nice but small home is now only $20,000.
Wow.
You can practically buy a home in Dearborn for a small family. I mean, small family, not short, but, you know, three, four people at least. That would be nice, really nice in Dearborn for less than probably a new car.
Yeah, no kidding.
There's something strange about that. I won't say it's wrong, but it's something very weird going on here when that's the case. Average house prices are probably still $40,000 to $50,000 for a small home in the city in general. But wow. So the pictures are in both, I think, Press and Guide and Times Herald of the ADP facility.
Yeah, but not of they don't have that wonderful picture on the cover. Of the old city hall.
But it's so huge, probably it could fit both, and maybe that's what the city is concerned about. It could fit easily city hall activities as well as the Dearborn School Board activities.
Right. Well, according to the Times Herald, Mayor O'Reilly said the current city hall, if vacated, would likely be used for housing or preserved as a historical landmark, which is, I mean, I guess I don't understand the landmark part. Just stay there.
Historical Society would have to take it over. Sure. But what would they put in there? I guess we have a lot of artifacts that we could take out of storage or something. But it does seem, I mean, then we'd have Historical Museum in West Dearborn and we'd have one in East Dearborn.
That's not bad.
I think if you really don't have any feelings about the historic nature of the land or the property or the iconic structure as the heart of government Dearborn, I'd say just sell it and let's get more nice condos or whatever there.
There's a fair amount around there already, though.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. So I don't know. It's an example, though, of how the newspapers, and I'm always criticizing newspapers when they deserve it, and they can criticize us too because we deserve it frequently and nobody says anything, but although we do get get the phone calls
exactly,
but you know the issue is now out there, and some people that read the papers or patch.com regularly know that the Press and Guide's first story was a little exaggerated, but so was apparently the statement by Mayor O'Reilly. This was almost a done deal and it was going to happen soon. I don't even know. I haven't seen any comments from other council people. Did Mayor O'Reilly tell anybody from the city council?
It doesn't sound like there was anybody else involved except for the mayor, the superintendent, and maybe
Guido.
J. Patrick Pepper. And Guido, yeah.
Guido from the school board.
So
Guido didn't think it was any big deal. Now, Winston, to his credit, says, I did send an email about the tour. I'm not sure it was before or after, to everybody on the Board of Ed. Well, so he did say he'd notified them. Maybe they didn't read their email yet, which is why some of them, like,
O'Reilly's
some of the school board members said, nobody's talked to us. How dare they make statements that we're going to move? Nobody said it wasn't perhaps the right thing to do, but had not been discussed. So they were very miffed that the rest of the Board of Ed wasn't consulted when it seemed like it was such a done deal from the story, not necessarily from Winston.
Well, even Mayor O'Reilly at the end of this article, this is a direct quote. Mm-hmm. This week, the staffs toured the building, he said, and if it's feasible, we could go in there and reduce overhead. Mm-hmm. So somebody was touring the building. So, and I have a feeling by the staffs, he means the staffs from both Ten Eyck as well as City Hall.
I can understand him saying that here's an opportunity to buy that property at a bargain price, because what are we going to use it for? But it seems like they, you know, just a couple weeks away that they got to make a bid, they got to do it. So if it's really a great deal, of course, if it's a great deal and you don't need it, then that's one thing. But
right.
If it's so much cheaper than fixing City Hall, the last time I heard about City Hall, in fact, was that the fourth floor is not even occupied with anything right now. We did have the Dearborn Council for the Arts up there, and then after the center opened down on Michigan Avenue, they moved that office, and of course the art gallery and so on moved down there. So I don't even think we're using the fourth floor, but that alone probably, I've been up there, I don't think that would be big enough for all the administrative offices for the school board.
Well, I wonder if they use every one of the offices in Ten Eyck. But you know, I mean, here's my question. What happens to Ten Eyck when they move? Because that's we have another school just sitting there.
Well, I assume the right thing for the school board to do there is to either sell the building to somebody that might want to use it maybe commercially, but I would say sell it to somebody that's going to create more housing. Although in this market, are people going to buy new houses?
Plus, it's smack dab. It's like part of Ten Eyck Park, which of course is a pool there for how much longer, right?
Well,
anyway, but yeah,
that's our next topic.
Well, along with the library, really weird situation.
Right. Well, we talked last week about the pools, and that is that the mayor has stated, at least in his budget plans, it isn't finalized because the City Council hasn't finalized this, but the mayor's recommendation is to not close any pools this year, but that we must, the city must negotiate with the community and specifically with the people around these pools to see how they can finance in the future. Otherwise, they will have to close pools.
Absolutely. That's now, for sure.
With the libraries, yes, they made a statement. Libraries, none of the remaining libraries that are open are targeted for closure in this year. And, of course, I think they had to make that statement because, gee whiz, people voted and passed approximately $1 million support for the libraries in Dearborn. That's not enough to run them. They need about $2 million a year to run them successfully. But because they passed that, that would really, if he said, well, we still got to close a few more because, you know, that millage didn't pay for all of them, but that would really hurt the effort and the vote that so many people made in Dearborn, a majority voting, to help support the libraries, okay, and to keep them open, even though maybe I would guess most people didn't know that it wouldn't keep all the libraries open because it was not the total amount they really needed. And, of course, I said, I think that's wrong. If you're going to do library support millage, then ask for every penny you need, as Dearborn Heights has done, and the libraries are never a threat over there because they get, of course, it's only a millage, right? And if property values drop anymore, they're still going to be hurt.
Exactly.
But, you know, there you go, okay? So library is not targeted for closure. I'd like to talk about this property tax thing. It was interesting, and I didn't listen to it, but I read a great deal of what Governor Snyder said in his State of the State address. Was it last week?
Yep.
Last week, Wednesday, Tuesday, whatever it was. And that is that property taxation is not working, and we've got to come up with something else.
Right.
But they didn't know what, or he didn't suggest what. But that's absolutely true. Now, of course, as property values keep going down, property taxes are going to be producing almost nothing needed for our city institutions and the state to and county to survive. So they have to find something else. And
probably a consumption tax.
Well, that's exactly right. And let me see if I have it with me.
Oh, really? I was just throwing
that
out.
The Romney advisor on economics and taxes had an editorial statement in the New York Times, of all places. And, you know, I didn't see it this morning, so I'm going to have to summarize it. But this is Romney's current economic advisor for his campaign. And he pointed back to, and, you know, I bet I don't have it here, and I'm so sorry, in front of me. But I read it closely, so here's what it said.
All right.
For the New York Times, he said there's 4 points about the taxation system in this country that have to change. And guess what the first one was? Property taxation doesn't work.
No. Okay. Everybody knows that. Okay. Well, okay.
Number two, of course, the income tax system with 67,000 pages of exemptions and deductions and so on, and Obama pointing out this week, I mean, what is really fair? And good for Bill Gates, who yesterday said, I'm not paying enough taxes. Of course, he's the richest guy, I think, in the world.
If not, he's neighbors with that
person. And, of course, Warren Buffett, very rich and billionaire, and he's said the rich aren't paying enough, and he'd be happy.
Mitt Romney said the rich are, oh, I'm sorry.
Well, he said he's paying all that legally is due, which is not much in this case. Yeah, it would 13%, something like that. So I'm sure Romney's secretary, just like Buffett's secretary, pays more, higher percentage.
Percentage.
Yeah. And no, it's just not fair. Just not fair. Sorry, folks. Sorry, rich people. If you think it's fair for you to pay less because you're creating so many jobs, prove it to me. Okay, prove it to me. It's not happening that way.
So what was the third thing? That's two.
I only got the two. Let me go back to the first, though, because I remember these clearly.
Okay.
And when we find it, we'll come back on. Because this is Republican. People think, oh, you're always supporting the Democrats, Cornyn. No, I'm not. No, I definitely not. I'm not a card-carrying Democrat at all. I rarely vote for Democrats. Now, I also rarely vote for Republicans, but I'm definitely an independent, if you had to know. Nonetheless, on this show, I think it is, we have to point out these alternative points of view. Romney's economic advisor, he quoted the results on this whole thing, like eliminating property taxes and going to a consumption tax nationally as well as statewide,
right,
as the best way to go. That was the conclusion of an economic panel under George W. Bush.
Interesting.
That is the smartest people about economics. They said it's got to stop the property taxes. Now, of course, income tax has to change too, but property taxes have to change, and you have to go to a consumption tax. And under Obama and under, you want to go back to Bill Clinton, the same sort of high-level smart person committee, bipartisan. Is it possible? Yes, it is possible. You know, you look at the facts and you say what's needed. We need to change the taxation system in America a lot. And I'm not, I don't want to use the word, I was going to say radically, but somebody say, oh, it's a radical thing, it's a progressive thing. No, this is Republicans, smart Republicans, for Romney's economic advisors, saying, look at all the previous commissions that came up with answers to our taxation problems that would be more fair and generate solid revenue, not this fluctuating thing with property taxes. And so that's got to go to consumption tax. And of course, and every year we usually, around tax time, try to have someone from the Michigan Fair Tax Organization or the National Fair Tax Organization, Dennis. It's fine with me, too.
Okay. That was a national, hint, folks. That was a hint.
because that is a consumption tax.
Sure.
But it's not a flat tax. People say, you know, Romney right now has been saying in public we should go to, for the income tax change, we should go to a flat tax. But that means there's still the withholding from your checks. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the year, though, it's real easy to file. It just depends on how much you earned. That percentage goes to the government. Of course, he wants the same percent for everybody with no deduction.
With a consumption tax, you never have to pay the government. It's automatically
all kinds of problems with flat tax for poor people.
Sure.
All kinds of problems there. It's not equitable, ultimately. But the fair tax is, and we always give a spotlight of usually a whole show around tax time to that idea. We brought it up to Representative Durrani when he took office. The guy gave him many pages of information about that. Nothing has happened. But it's interesting that we now have the governor, Governor Snyder, saying we've got to go to something other than property tax, and that's got to mean consumption tax. It has to mean consumption tax, which means more money than we're paying now as in the so-called sales tax to help run government, both locally and statewide. But that will be the most consistent, the most stable, the most fair. And of course, it's only set high enough to equal what you're already paying in these property taxes.
Now, a year ago, we did have someone, and so everybody knows we're going to, we're actively pursuing an in-studio, hopefully, or at least on the phone, interview with someone around tax time, like Jay said. But
yeah.
I remember last year, we talked to the gentleman, and it may have even been off the air, but he was really excited, and he said that Snyder has people in his, you know, that advise him that are big proponents of the fair tax. So he thought last year things were going to start moving. It's a year later, but it does seem like at least they're looking for alternatives.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear that they are. And what will the Republicans who are in the majority come up with? That's basically the question. The Democrats hardly can give any input in these committees. According to Durrani, they may be members, but they're just ruled out of order whenever they try to continue a debate on something or put out their own ideas, which isn't very bipartisan, folks. But, you know, nonetheless, I understand.
That was Romney's advisor that you were talking about?
Yes, Romney's current economic advisor had these 4 points, and we really need to review them on this show because, I thought it was amazing that he's agreeing with people from the Clinton administration in economics, the George W. Bush administration proposals, which none of which any Congress in those administrations have put in place.
Nothing ever happened.
Because it actually is a complete change for everything we're doing with taxation. So in a way, politically, everybody would be somewhat upset.
Oh, absolutely.
Some people would be upset because they lose the home mortgage deduction. Other people would be upset because the rates might be slightly higher. Other people be upset because, oh, my goodness, I have to pay more in sales tax, even though they don't realize that all the other taxes are gone, that they get more in their paycheck. It's something everyone can kind of not like.
Especially CPAs, because it'll make everything
actually
easier.
Actually, with fair tax, the CPA Association of USA is endorsing the fair tax.
Is that right? Okay.
Because it would take them away from the onerous burden of reading and applying 67,000 pages of tax code.
Each year. So many new things.
They can start being creative with accounting for the good of the business each year.
In other words,
accountants know that they're not just there to find loopholes,
right?
Or they should be. They should be treated as professionals in guiding the economic choices of the organization each year. Although usually, I know small businesses in Dearborn, they call somebody in and he tries to find the loopholes and read their receipts.
Right, right.
But he's not an active participant in the running of the business, which could really help them, yeah, you know, in the long run, according to the CPA. So it's interesting that for the fair tax proposal, which is a consumption tax, it is, but I think, better than the flat tax that Romney himself is proposing. And his advisor hasn't said which one is better, but they have said clearly, we've got to greatly change the income tax system to be more fair, and the property tax system has to be replaced with a consumption tax. Now, the fair tax people do say, to be correct here, we don't need the income tax.
Right.
We don't need the property tax. It all should be a consumption tax.
Which makes things so streamlined and easy. I just think it's weird that Romney's spending all of his attention focusing on the economy or on money when he should be focusing on colonizing the moon like Newt Gingrich.
Yeah,
that took a while to set up, sorry.
I think Moonbase Newt is going to be a negative factor in the campaign if Newt gets the
51st
the nod from Republicans. I'm afraid that Newt Gingrich at this point in his life is over grandiose and egomaniac too in his own self-image. Now, a lot of people love somebody who's that certain, who is that, you know, focused. But that also fits like Adolf Hitler's point of view too. I'm not saying, no, everybody's going to call. I'm not saying there's any good connection there, but I'm saying the most focused people are often focused on the wrong things in a negative way. Now, a few people who are very focused, like Albert Einstein and others, accomplish tremendous things because they have that laser beam focus, and maybe to the negative side of their own relationships with other people, but they really accomplish tremendous things, and only because they put the time and the thought into going that single direction. But the moon base, I mean, I'm a supporter of science research. I have been for years. It's a crime what they've done to NASA in cutting its budget. But I'm not so sure. A lot of controversy among space scientists and astrophysicists why we need a moon base, that there's a tremendous argument out there. Newt, which if you really knew science, you'd know that there's probably more good reasons for a base on Mars rather than the moon. Now, on the moon, we might discover, who knows, we don't have evidence that it's really worth anything, that we could even find natural resources there to power a moon base, so it wouldn't need, I mean, if we had to constantly restock it from the Earth, we couldn't afford that.
No,
you know,
that doesn't make sense.
But Mars has that potential. I know it's further away, but if you've got to send, you actually want to have a colony somewhere, then Mars, to most scientists now, they would agree that makes a lot more sense at building something that's self-sustaining. Of course, Jon Stewart last night on The Daily Show made a joke. He said, yeah, that's Newt Gingrich, all right. He sees how the planet is dying. He knows about global warming. He did a PSA with Nancy Pelosi a few years ago. I was talking about global warming and how the planet ecology is bad. He sees something dying, and he's going to go to the next young thing. He's just, you know.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's like his first two wives with the diseases and then moving on to
Pelosi's
another.
Pelosi's not a big fan of his, is she?
Well, she wouldn't be, no. But at the time, they were both
I know, I'm teasing.
Significant political
because
leaders.
She came out and said he will not win. I know something. Well, he will not win.
In a way, I feel sorry for the Republicans that these are as many Republicans as said, this is all we got?
Good point.
This is all there is for candidates? Although we hope to get, again, I don't know, somebody other than the top two to talk about their candidate before the Republican primary. Okay, we just got a few minutes before our usual Jim Hightower break, where he's definitely not a Republican.
No. Never been
but a populist. I wouldn't call him progressive, although you could call him that. I'd say he's in favor of ideas that are good for all of us. For example, real quick here, we got an email from Clean Water Action, which is a group that lobbies in Lansing. It's a national group too, but guess what they try to accomplish?
I love their name.
Keep our water cleaner. Okay, we need clean air, clean food, and clean water. And Michigan should be known for clean water more than any other state. Aren't we the Great Lakes state?
We are.
We should be the symbol of clean water for all of us to drink.
That's right.
Well, there's only 13 legislators in Michigan, in the House and Senate in Michigan, that have supported every proposal to make our water cleaner or to maintain its cleanliness. Only 13 legislators. I suspect they're all Democrats. But one of them is George Durrani. So good for George. He was mentioned. He's one of only. But how ironic. Who could vote against clean water? I mean, who could ever vote? I don't care what the proposal or the cost. If it's going to make our water cleaner, along with our air and our food eventually. I mean, those are two separate issues. I think they shouldn't be. But there's only 13 legislators, including George DeRaney, that vote all the time in favor of clean water. Oh, my goodness. There's something wrong there. But nonetheless.
It's called an agenda.
Yeah. But the point is the primary is going to be February 28th, the presidential primary. Democratic Party has said Democrats should not go vote because there's only going to be Obama there. But you could go and vote for Obama. But if you do, the Democratic Party, if you're in the party, if you're part of a precinct and you're going to go to Democratic Party meetings later to vote, they're going to penalize you for voting for Obama in the primary because they said, we don't support the primary. We think the state of Michigan should save the $10 million. Of course, they said that because every time you have a primary, since it's only Republicans that are competing, it's publicity free. It's $10 million of free publicity for Republican candidates.
Sure.
That's what it is. And so they don't like it for that reason. Of course, I don't like it because where's the Green Party, the Libertarian Party, and any other party that might be on the ballot?
You feel it's an unfair advantage to the
big... It's built-in publicity for anybody who's in it if the others are excluded.
Right. That's why we're here, though.
If they weren't excluded, yeah, the Green Party and the Libertarians would love to participate, I bet. But legally, they're excluded because who wrote the laws? The Democrats and the Republicans. On purpose, to exclude any other point of view. If they can do it, why not? Hey, if we can exclude those other people, they might just take votes away, and we don't want that. No, you don't want other points of view out there. So shame on you, Dems and Republicans, although the Dems, I think, were right in saying it's wasted $10 million. I felt, and I said on the show many times, let the party organizations choose their own best candidates internally. You say, well, it's not very democratic. Yes, it is. You get to vote on them all democratically once they choose.
Plus, the process would change a little bit, but they're still going to get feedback from the people. In other words,
people that really care and want to work within the party, they will be the ones, the most educated ones, about who's the best candidate. I'm sorry to say that even with the 19 debates that have happened now among Republican candidates, most Republicans are still scratching their heads because all they heard was sound bites. They really don't know any of these people even after 19 debates. They only know the spin that, say, Fox News or MSNBC puts on the sound bites later. But to really know somebody, you've got to hear them at length in detail and read all of their position papers. I printed out Ron Paul's position paper, which is, you know, a lot of these people on their website, including Newt. I know he said, go to my website, read my positions in detail. And it's dozens and dozens of pages of details. But that's really what, supposedly, they're standing for. Okay, I wanted to say that the Michigan primary is primarily going to be for Republicans and anybody else that wants to vote as a Republican. Democrats, independents, thank you, state of Michigan, I as an independent, can help choose the best candidate for the Republicans. Okay, I'm going to go in there and ask for a Republican ballot. I will. And I will vote for what I think is the best Republican who's on the ballot at the time. I wonder if Herman Cain is still on the ballot here like he was in South Carolina. 1% of South Carolina voted for Herman Cain.
That was what, just last week? Interesting. Yeah. When did he bow out? Like a month ago?
Right.
Interesting.
Right.
There was already printed. You couldn't waste.
Well, but realize that the voters there also were told that a vote for Herman Cain is a vote for Stephen Colbert.
Right.
And there was a last-minute sort of campaign with funding and TV ads from the definitely not coordinating with Stephen Colbert Super PAC that supported a vote for Herman Cain as a vote for Stephen Colbert. And I know he's a comedian.
Right.
He's not a real person. Well, he is a real person, but
it's a character. But at the same time, boy, he went to Washington and he spoke and he was actually reprimanded, but he said, hey, I was invited. Do you remember all that?
That's right.
About a year ago? Interesting.
That he knew something and others didn't know.
Right.
Okay. So that primary, just want to let you know, you can register. If you're not registered, now if you've already voted in Dearborn, you're already registered whatever city, you can go and vote on February 28th. That's a Tuesday, of course. And typically, if you're not registered, if you've never registered before, whether you were old or young, you need to go to City Hall, to the city clerk's office in your area, and sign up. Show some ID and fill out the form. It only takes a few seconds. Sign up, register to be a voter. Okay? That's And you can't do that last minute. It has to be 60 days in advance, because today is the 27th of January. The deadline would be the 28th, so they let it go till Monday the 30th. Not the 31st, but Monday the 30th, right, the day after the weekend.
You mean 30 days. You just said 60 days.
I'm sorry. 30 days ahead. Thank you. And that would be January 28th, but that's on the weekend. So they're still going to give you Monday. So if you're not registered now, or if you know anyone, young person or older person, who would like to vote, not only for, maybe you don't want to vote in the Republican primary, that's up to you, of course, but you get to be registered to vote in any upcoming election. Oh, my gosh. Definitely the one in November, you'll already be registered. But why not take every opportunity to send a message, to make your choice? It's a democratic system. They give you the chance. I think negating that chance is the first mistake that anybody living in America makes. You're a citizen here. You need to participate. And the first way you always should participate, you got to do a lot more than just voting in elections, but you need to vote. You can't vote if you're not registered. So Monday, tell everybody you know, gentle listeners, help them to get to the city clerk's office where they live, to register
live
for Monday, and we'll give them all those options in the future. If they decide later they don't want to vote, that's up to them. But, and I always said this to some young people here at the college, and they said, I don't know anybody on the ballot that I want to vote for. I said, okay, I'm glad you're that well-educated to know. But what if at the last second you discovered that one of the candidates was somebody you wanted to vote for? You accidentally went to their website, maybe, or you met them in person and said, boy, this person is really good. I'd like to vote for. Well, you can't at the last minute.
That's right.
You can't do it. So even if you think they're all corrupt or whatever, you might actually discover, even your daughter met Judge Summer, which will be our story right after Jim Hightower, right here on the campus.
Right on campus. And met him. She has her picture taken with
him. Yeah, and we'll talk more about him and his always interesting ongoing situation right after these comments from Jim Hightower. So stay tuned here, as they say in Radio Land.
One of the hidebound myths in our culture is the Horatio Alger fantasy. You might be born poor, bucko, but America's the land of upward mobility. Anyone with grit and gumption can scramble from the very bottom of the economic ladder all the way to the top. At last, though, this musty myth is being dispelled as everyone from academics to Wall Street protesters are proving that it simply isn't true. Even prominent politicos are catching on. As one said last fall, movement up into the middle income is actually greater in Europe than it is in America. That's no liberal talking. It's Rick Santorum. The same guy who now says there are no classes in America was at least visiting reality just a few months ago. While GOP leaders still try to dismiss the issue of income inequality, the mobility issue goes to the very core of America's identity. It's too big to deny or ignore. John Bridgeland, a former Bush aide who now heads a policy group called Opportunity Nation, says bluntly that Republicans, quote, will need to talk about a lack of mobility, a lack of access to the American dream. Many recent studies confirm that our country has developed a class stickiness that is alarmingly dangerous to our social unity. A Pew Research report finds that about 62% of Americans born on the top rungs of the economic ladder stay there as adults, and 65% born on the bottom rungs remain stuck there for life. In a ranking of 9 affluent countries, Canada was tops in upward mobility, and the U.S. was last. This is Jim Hightower saying, America won't offer a true opportunity for upward mobility unless we restore a unity of purpose among all of our people. And we can't achieve that as long as top corporate and governmental leaders deliberately widen the chasm separating the rich from the rest of us.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Why do congressional Republicans hate unborn babies? Yeah, I know they profess to love the unborn, even considering them persons from the very moment of conception. Yet, whose interest do you think these same politicos have chosen to protect when it comes to regulating an especially nasty industrial toxin that wreaks holy hell on unborn babies? That nasty is mercury, a neurotoxin that spews into our air from old coal-burning electric utilities. this toxic mercury falls into water, where it's turned into methylmercury that builds up in fish. Many pregnant women unwittingly eat these contaminated fish, and the methylmercury messes terribly with the emerging nervous systems of their fetuses, producing babies with impaired IQs, unable to think and learn as they should. Now, though, after 20 years of delay forced by electric company lobbyists, the Environmental Protection Agency finally came out in December with regulations to control the mercury emissions from power plants. Hallelujah! Save the babies! But wait, the lovers of the unborn are not celebrating this move to stop industry from doing gratuitous damage to children's IQs. Far from it. Congressional Republicans are now howling to overturn the EPA's regulation of mercury, and a bunch of them say they want to kill the EPA itself to stop such governmental interference in the corporate pursuit of profits. Unborn babies make great politics, but they don't make big campaign donations. The GOP goes with whom it really loves. This is Jim Hightower saying, how ironic that the defenders of mercury pollution are, quote, mad as a hatter about the EPA's protection of children. Maybe they don't know that that phrase comes from 19th century hat makers who used mercury compounds in their work, often causing mental damage that literally drove them mad.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
This is the new WHFR Journal. Jay Koronik and Dennis Reimar is with you here. Local news, alternative views, WHFR.fm, the station making ways. That's always the way we do it, certainly. Interesting response that I discovered to President Obama's State of the Nation address. Yes, we're local news here, but, you know, what the President of the United States says and does. I just wanted to point out, in terms of alternative views, is that the Green Party, that's right, the Green Party of the United States, GP.org, and the Libertarian Party of the United States, which is LP.org. Pretty simple to, although it might get confused. Is that
LPGP, sure.
LPGP. But you can go to their websites. They were not allowed on television to give a response immediately after Obama's speech. Why not? There's people elected from the Green Party and the Libertarian Party. Congress doesn't have a GP or an LP member, but around the country there are elected officials in those parties, and they are national parties. Libertarian Party will be on every single state ballot with their candidates this November. Green Party still struggling. They'll be on like two-thirds, three-quarters of the ballots. And they're the only, now there's other political parties that you may see on the ballot, but they're really not organized throughout the year. They don't really have operations every single day in every single state, like press releases. So,
what other than the, are you saying the other ones in addition to the Green and the Libertarian?
Right.
You know, and we went to the Green Party National Convention a couple of years
right
ago.
Here, right here in Detroit.
Isn't it in Vermont this year, I want to say? Or somewhere in the
I'll let you know.
East Coast? But,
well, I'll okay. let you know.
All right. I've got well, then, it for right now, it's in Vermont.
Yeah. We may actually attend. There's some, they're both a Green Party nominating convention and a Libertarian nominating convention. Here in Michigan, of course, for the state of Michigan, and those will be done sometime in May or June, and it's always fun to see how these parties organize. Even if you're not a member, they will let people come and watch, you know, and then see what the result is, see what the debate is about within their own organization.
Well, it's exposure too; they love it. Yeah. Actually, I think it's in Baltimore this year, not Vermont.
Oh yeah, that's an exciting city. Yeah.
I think that was sarcasm.
Yeah, well, I remember. The great Detroit DJ Dick Purton.
Sure.
He, for many years, started in Baltimore, Maryland, and he has always does jokes about how they roll up the sidewalks at night and, you know, no cultural life.
Right.
And dull, boring. Okay, whatever. Here's a statement from the Libertarian Party. I'll just make it fairly brief about their being left out of the response. So they actually, the headline actually says, shameless free infomercials for two guilty parties, Obama's State of the Union and the Republican response. And this is from the Libertarian Party of the U.S. Sponsors of even the most embarrassing, inane, and fraudulent infomercials have to pay for their own airtime. They can't force TV stations to run their ads for free by threatening to shut them down. Through the Federal Communications Commission and other government coercion, Democratic and Republicans politicians run their shameless infomercials on primetime TV free of charge. Tonight's infomercial handouts were the State of the Union address and the opposition response. Of course, I have to say is that State of the Union, it's a tradition, it's required by our Constitution, and I think everybody should see the elected president of the United States deliver it. It's not just a tradition, folks. It may be free ad for the president, of course, but it's only once a year, and it is required by the Constitution that it be done every year. So I think that is news. I don't know about the Republicans, but if you're going to let the Republicans do it, yes, why not let the Green Party and Libertarian Party at least also have a response? And it's never equal time.
No.
Republicans only got, what, 10 minutes? And Obama's speech was an hour and 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's a little bit more.
Yeah, and they used to criticize Bill Clinton for giving long speeches.
Yeah, but technically, if they feel they have a valid reason, have a interrupt wherever we're watching with a speech? I don't mean any time they want, but I just remember
the networks.
Yeah, I mean, if the president's going to speak, the networks are going to cover it.
Yeah, I think though, at the State of the Union, they shouldn't do any commentary.
Just let it speak for itself,
yeah.
Or let us do the commentary.
Or have a, as they've done in other cases, have a website open and the email commentaries or the tweeting is scrolled at the bottom. No. Not for the State of the Union. But if you're going to allow response, then, yeah, allow all these parties to get in here. But they do say, unlike Ginsu knives, hairspray for men, and ripped abs in 30 days, the Republican and Democratic infomercials have no redeeming social value.
Oh, that was good.
And of course, they make points just real briefly here. And you can go to their websites. Again, it's just an interesting thing to do, right? Even if you're not a Green Party member or Libertarian Party. They claim both Democratic and Republican politicians initiated and supported bailouts. Both Democratic and Republican politicians initiated and supported mandates to buy medical insurance imposed on individuals and small businesses. Both Democratic and Republican politicians have voted for a laundry list of new and expanded government programs, keeping taxes high and driving our national debt to staggering sums that defy comparison. And, of course, guess what? Libertarian Party is against all those things. Whether or not you are, it's up to you. President Barack Obama blamed the administration of former President George W. Bush for driving up debt and unemployment. Who, by the way, let's not forget, George W. Bush is the one who proposed the bailouts. And it was supported right before the end of his term by the people in Congress then with his support. So to say Obama came up with the $800 billion of bailouts, yes, he let it go on. But it was started with George W. Bush and the Republicans. So let's not, even though the money was paid out during Obama's, let's not libertarians criticize Obama for the, okay, he went along with it. I'm not sure he could have stopped it because it was already, I guess he could have, but it was already voted and everybody, Dems and Republicans, said we've got to do that. Small difference, of course, of opinion under Obama's administration at that time about whether or not to bail out the auto industry in Detroit. And, of course, let's never forget that Romney was against that totally.
Totally the complete bailout of the auto industry.
Do not bail out GM, Chrysler, or Ford if they needed it. As it turns out, they didn't need it. He was totally, came to Michigan and said that. And how dare he, since his dad was a Michigan auto executive, American Motors. How dare he say
that?
What
was his reasoning behind it? But why come here?
Well, wow. It's what the libertarians say, that big government should never bail out anybody. Let the free market, let the businesses that are not well run, well managed, or not needed anymore need to die.
Okay.
And all those workers need to be kicked out.
Darwinism there, huh?
Yeah, kicked out in the streets, of course. And, of course, then they criticized Republican Governor Mitch Daniels, who did the Republican response. He said he threw blame back on the president and on the Democratic-controlled Senate for all of these bailouts and that one. And, of course, the Libertarian Party says they're both correct. Republicans and Democrats both are the ones responsible for causing today's economic woes, especially, the mortgage lending things. I mean, you look at who was behind the Freddie Mac regulations. Who advised Freddie Mac?
Right.
Newt Gingrich. He wasn't a lobbyist. He was just a consultant. For millions of dollars they paid him for the advice that, caused part of the cause for all of us, to experience that 2008 downturn.
Just
but all the bad
consultant.
Mortgages, it was the Democrats and the, lending to poor people. It was all the banks doing their double dealing and all of Wall Street doing their sale of risky equities. It was, come on. It
perfect
was
perfect storm.
Blame everybody. Who was in charge then? It was the Democrats and the Republicans. If the Libertarians were in charge, Would they have done it that way? Probably not. If the Green Party would have been totally in charge of Congress, I don't think so. They wouldn't have done it the same way either. So, you know, business as usual or politics as usual. A lot of independents like myself, we do hold both parties to blame, and they should both take the blame. Shame on them for passing off the blame on the other party. But let's move ahead. Can either party or both, with the Libertarians, with the Green Party, can we move ahead? Can we go the right direction to get this straightened out for once and for all? It will require some major change, and major change always hurts a few people. But I think we can modify the results, and if we get back on track, then we won't have this problem again. So that, I just wanted to say that I have signed up for free emails from both the Green Party and Libertarian Party. Every week or so, I get their statements of their positions.
The Libertarians send out a lot more than the Green
Party. And it's never reported. Shame on the New York Times or any other paper. Do they ever say, well, what is the Libertarian Party front, or what is the Green Party? No, they never, never, never. Or they bought out by the Dems and Republicans too? I guess so. I mean, you can never get anybody to support your point of view if nobody ever finds out about it. So I think it's a responsibility of good Democrats out there, good Republicans, good independents. Get on the mailing lists. Go to their websites regularly. Keep in touch, because you won't find it out any other way. The Republicans and Newt are always saying, oh, the media are against us. Well, the media are against the Libertarians and the Green Party, too, by the way.
Right.
And I don't really think they're all that much in favor of the Democrats. Certainly not Fox News. You can't say Fox News is in favor of the Democrats. So there you go. Monday, get people registered. If they're not already registered to vote in Dearborn and the surrounding area, get them to go to the city clerk's office with some ID. It only takes a few minutes. Normal business hours, of course, I'm sure. Okay, where do we move from there, Dennis?
I think we should move back to Dearborn and back to City Hall. Or actually, mm-hmm. no, I'm sorry, into the courts.
Yes.
And talk a little bit about...
We said summers would be discussed, and we've got 10 minutes to go, so go ahead.
Well, we're talking about a paper, of course, J. Patrick Pepper. This came out in Wednesday's edition of The Press and Guide. On the 25th, and the headline, Judge Summers' Wages Garnished to Pay $1.2 million Court Judgment. Here's what I got out of this article. Well done, by the way, by Mr. Pepper. Judge Summers had an agreement in place. He said, no garnishment until my appeal is done. And that was agreed to by everyone, both sides. At the same time, he was questioning why he had to pay it in the first place. And apparently the city of Dearborn is saying, we are not paying. We are not covering this bill, which is the judgment against him.
The judgment against him and the legal fees.
And the legal fees. The 1.2 does include all of mm-hmm. that. Let's be clear. Mm-hmm. And I think $400,000, I want to say, right. is roughly for the legal fees.
Unbelievably high. That's almost 30%, 40% of the settlement is what the lawyers are asking for their payment. I've never heard of any sort of, I guess I'm not keeping up with the courts, is that if somebody wins the case for you, they get paid that much? That much. Now they say, oh, we put hours and hours
into this.
We're in the wrong
business.
Well, obviously.
But here's my thing. You and I were talking about why would they garnish his wages if the battle is who's going to pay this? In other words, we didn't think Summers was in the mix. According to this article and according to Summers himself, he shouldn't be. But since the city's saying, no, this is not our responsibility, and the state's saying, we're not paying it, they're going after the only one they can, who is in the form of Judge Summers. Mm-hmm. So there we are, and this is still going to go out. He does. We were talking a little bit about are they taking all of his money? The answer to that, Jay, is absolutely not. The man makes over $138,000 a year, mm-hmm. and he gets paid twice a month. So the $3,000 that he had frozen, $3,399.13 that they had put a hold on in his bank account, was just the first payment.
Still, at $1.2 million, it's going to take decades to pay that back if you stuck with it. I have to criticize the city. Why did you go ahead with it? If you agreed to wait until the appeals were done, that won't take more than a couple more months. It's still going to take decades for the garnishing.
Well, this
if
wasn't
he
the
has
city.
To pay, you know.
This was
who did the garnishing?
The defense attorney. And he's the gentleman that the agreement was in place with Julie Pucci's defense attorney.
Okay.
And he said, the defense attorney, and I shouldn't say who, his name is Joel Sklar.
Okay. Yeah.
Joel Sklar mm-hmm. finally said, you know what? Summers, I have to come after you. I apologize. I know we had a gentleman's agreement, but I have to come after you because the city's not doing anything, and it's not fair to my client.
I see.
That's okay. how it started.
It's loved. It is somewhat complicated. It's good to have clarity on that, but Summers didn't think it would have to have that come to that until the final ruling, which couldn't take that long. But I think the lawyer just wanted to get paid.
I think so too.
That's really
this is his last
they wanted their
appeal. So
they wanted their $400,000.
I don't blame. He probably had some stuff. It was Christmas and everything.
As Mitt Romney would say, "Whatever legal is fair," which is crazy.
I don't know. Anyway. But, yeah, he was on campus yesterday. My daughter was out by the – not far from our building here, and Judge Summers came by, and she wasn't aware that it was him. And he did say, you know, he was campaigning or whatever for him, and my daughter let her opinion be known, and that was an interesting interaction. But, yeah, she had somebody take a picture with her phone. Mm-hmm. And so she has
as reported last week in the papers, he's hoping to run for a different judgeship, third district judgeship in November, apparently. So,
okay. Well, good.
Well, whatever. He's going to have to pay that money back, perhaps.
Yeah. Well, as long as he keeps working, everyone will be fine. Yeah.
We have to say, and I think it's the opinion of Brittany too, is to meet him on the street or when he's campaigning, or he's come to my house and going door to door. He and his wife, they seem like very nice people. They're not egomaniacs. They're not dictatorial. They're not.
No, he's almost understated to a degree, and I would like that.
Although he's known as a very strict judge, and I think a lot of people, probably in general, maybe not about Summer, but would say that. You need a judge who is firm and will find one kind of appropriate punishment or the other for people that have done something wrong, that have broken our laws.
I think that most people agree that the main thing they look for in a judge is consistency,
mm-hmm.
you know, knowing what you get. Now, Brittany, she's not in favor for various reasons, but whatever. I mean, that's her opinion. When she apologized after finding out who he was very cool about it. She said, no. Yeah. He said, hey, I hear that all the time. Don't worry, you know. Criticism comes with his job is what
of
he
course.
Means. So
yeah.
It was interesting.
Any politician would.
You have to be thick-skinned, don't
that,
you, for that?
We have to have that because people, you know, there's always going to be somebody that might in a public meeting be catcalling or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody did an editorial comment somewhere in the last month that not a lot of good sense of humor. In other words, that. A lot of the Republicans running now, they can't tell a joke.
They
don't find humor. They can't laugh. They say Romney's quite a prankster in college. He used to do some really awful pranks as part of his fraternity and so on.
Awfully good.
Well, sort of harmful,
hurtful, I read
a... embarrassing things. Yeah. But if you call that a sense of humor, I don't. But he can't tell a joke. I've never heard him tell a funny joke in any of these campaign appearances. And do any of them tell a joke on stage during the debates? I never heard of a joke from any of these. So there was a commentator saying, you know, where's the jokes from like a President Kennedy or... Ronald Reagan even could tell a joke really well.
Obama's not horrible at it.
Not too bad.
No, he's not too bad. But I'm going to say, but doesn't
the spilled milk thing in the State of the Union address sort of fell flat.
But don't you think comic relief during a fairly serious presentation, a speech, what have you, would go over well? Show some human side.
A good wit or a sense of irony at times can win debates for you, I think. Right. And none of these people are winning debates that way. They're just getting gruff and dictatorial and
offensive and sometimes
blaming
against
the media, rather than answering the question. In the time we have remaining, and only 3 minutes before 2 o'clock, Highway 61 will begin as soon as Joanne arrives.
I know you're going to do something. I have to. I want everybody to know that this is so cool. Wednesday, February 1st, at our college in the Skyline Cafe. It's actually the Skylight Cafe, which is right outside of our fishbowl here, between 11:30 and 1:30. HSCC Student Center is presenting the Joe Sorokak Chili Bowl. Jay, do you want to tell us a little bit about this particular event? Because you happen to have some personal knowledge.
Well, it's an event on campus, and anyone in the public is welcome to come here. For $5, mm-hmm. You can sample all the chili that's being served here. It's a sort of a competition, I guess. And there's many different types made by faculty and staff here at Henry Ford Community College.
Including Mr. Jay
Corner. Well, they asked me to do something, and I don't say it's going to be edible, but I'm going to... Going to put a crock out there, and you know it's probably going to be a crock of what? But crock of chili, folks. But nonetheless, it will benefit some cause, some good cause. It's actually raising money, and it's all organized by the adjunct faculty union. So it's all the part-timers, and there's about 800 of us. It's our union that decided to do this event
awesome.
And to have this chili contest or many different types of chili available for people to sample and to eat. And the $5 cost, I mean, we're all doing it at our own cost. We're making the chili for free and bringing it in. And
scholarship
$5
fund.
Will go to a scholarship
you
fund.
Betcha.
There you go. So we hope that a lot of people might want to come by. The time, again, is 11:30 to 1:30.
On Wednesday, February 1st, which is this coming Wednesday.
Right in the Student Center, which is the big building at the front of campus here, main campus, HFCC, Evergreen Road, just south of Ford Road.
So for $5, you get to sample as many of these as you want. That's almost an all-you-can-eat.
Yeah, I don't know if they put a limit on it.
I'm going to find out.
And I don't know what the individual serving of any bowl of chili is.
I'm
but
not afraid to
with
eat.
Mine, I don't think you better take more than about a quarter cup to start with.
Yes, would you say kind of spicy?
I'm known for, I call it the four pepper chili.
Mm.
And it's not small peppers. I put in real jalapenos and other kinds of peppers and I simmer them a long
You know,
time.
We've gone out to meals together. You're not afraid of spicy food,
so this does
not surprise me. And it might be vegetarian, you said, which I really like.
Yeah, I think... I have several good vegetarian recipes, and it's interesting. Some people have come to my house, and when they survived eating it, they actually thought that there was meat in it.
Okay.
Well,
we have if you win, I will talk about this on our next show for at least 30 seconds. Is that fair?
It's just a good cause.
All right, good.
Thanks for mentioning that. Another thing coming up on February 8th, which is a week later, but not on campus here, is the event where they give awards to local volunteers and organizations that help the arts. In Dearborn. It's called the Dearborn Mayor's, the Mayor of Dearborn's Art Awards. And just two people, everybody's worthy, but Kurt Doley, who is a fellow educator in the media program at Dearborn High School. He more or less was helping and then took over the media production program in Dearborn High School. Kurt Doley is receiving this year the Arts Educator Award.
Solid program over there.
Yeah, right. And also the Volunteer Award. And there's so many great volunteers in Dearborn, but this year it's going to Cynthia Frabet. And congratulations to Cynthia because she was actually on the staff here at WHFR, a former telecom student of mine many years ago, but not too many. Cynthia, don't worry, I won't give anything away what year it was. Her daughter, Kira, is an accomplished singer and actress and is in several things in Dearborn performances frequently every year. But Cynthia is still volunteering to help the Dearborn Public Schools and other groups. She's known for her photographic skills, but also just helping these student groups in accomplishing their goals and probably a longer resume than I have in front of me, but I've seen her and heard her participating in many of these things since she left WHFR staff and
Good for her.
Community
awesome.
College. So they're recognizing, again, a great volunteer, one of many in Dearborn, but a former staffer here at WHFR and student at HFCC, Cynthia Frabet. Congratulations
right.
to Doley and Frabet.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
All right. We have, we're winding down here. I know the podcast will...
Well, we wanted to mention, podcast, maybe another minute, maybe